You can buy books by my podcast guests and find other recommended arts and crafts techniques books by visiting uk.bookshop.org/shop/creativityfound. Don't worry, I've popped a link in the show notes. Plus, by buying from my shop, you'll be supporting this show with a little bit of affiliate loveliness. Thank you. Use the link in the show notes to purchase any of the books mentioned in this episode.
You put a lot of yourself and what you've experienced and what you know what other people experienced, how you understand it, into what you write, I think. And writing helps you understand it more. So I always think in a way, even though there have been times when life has not been good, it's given me something. There's been a bonus to it. And it's very much about what's going on inside us and how we manage to cope with it.
Hi, I'm Claire, founder of Open Stage Arts Drama and Singing Classes for Adults. Lots of the adults who come to our classes and online events are looking for a creativity that has been put on the back burner during their sensible grown-up years. I have found this to be true among other creatives too, so I've decided to find out more about the painters, photographers, writers, printmakers, actors, crafters, teachers, musicians and more that have found or refound their creativity later in life. This time, I'm chatting with award-winning author Deborah Martin, whose foray into writing started with an evening class, but took her much further than she expected. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
You studied English literature and fine art at university, but your recent return to creative writing happened 11 years ago. Can you tell me how and why you started writing?
Well, I only started writing really because, sadly, it was because of a traumatic event in my life. My husband died of pancreatic cancer, so it had been a pretty awful time for us, me and my two daughters, who were quite young at the time. And life for me at the time was really just revolving around work, family, sorting things out. Mm. And I just felt I needed a bit of space for myself. And the only thing I could think of to do was like an evening class. And so I went to a creative writing class and completely new to what I'd been doing, because at university, of course, it was critiquing fine literature. And so a very different kind of way of looking at reading and so on. Yeah. But I think that set me up for actually understanding what good literature was. So it's a great help. And reading is the most amazing way of learning how to write, in fact. So I went to this creative writing class. I wrote a short story. It was terrible. but I really enjoyed doing it. And it sort of set me off to do another one. We had various little assignments to do. And by the end of it, I was actually starting to really enjoy writing and having ideas of my own. And it sort of set me off doing other things. I entered a little competition. My poems was cited for a recommendation and read out to the audience at the award ceremony. So that was like a massive pat on the back. I was very pleased with that. And I also started thinking about writing longer things than short stories. And my older daughter was quite instrumental in pushing me on with that, because we've always had this little bit of a sparring relationship between us. You know, I would say, oh, I think I might do this. And she'd say, go on then. And or she would say, I was interested in this. And I said, well, find out about it then. So she pushed me on. And via NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month in November, which is like an online platform for people who are writers or would-be writers to actually get into the grip of writing and actually try and write something like 50,000 words in November. So it's like an exercise in keeping going, not procrastinating, doing some of it every day, which is the thing that we all do. You know, we say we're going to do something and we don't. And so I started on that. And by the end of it, I mean, she gave up before I did. And I kept going to the bitter end. And I actually wrote about 35,000 words, which a lot of it was rubbish.
Yeah.
But some of it was okay. And what it taught me was that I could actually write far more than like a 2,000 or 3,000 word short story. So it set me off on the path towards novel writing, and I continued on with a novel on a subject or topic which actually has quite a lot of social content to it. And again, Laura was instrumental in pushing me into it, because we were discussing Twelfth Night and gender issues, because she was studying A-level English. We had some fairly sort of academic discussions about it, but we also talked about gender issues and how gender's seen in society and how it's used in society. And then we started talking about people who had gender issues, you know, real gender issues, you know, transgender issues.
Yeah.
And I sort of gaily said, that would be the most amazing novel to write, you know, about somebody's journey. And she said, well, do it then, as you'd expect. And so I did. And that actually turned into Chained Melodies, which I'm probably the book I'm most proud of, actually.
Yeah.
It meant the most to me, because it actually has something to say, not just as a story, but also about a social issue and an issue that people struggle with, and who do, when they do struggle with it, are immensely brave, I think, in dealing with it and the world and how the world sees them and treats them.
Yeah. You did a lot of research for that.
I did. I was actually very lucky with that, because somebody put me in touch with somebody who was already going through that kind of transition, and they were very kindly talked to me about it. And then through them, I also found out about somebody else who talked a lot more about it, and I still stay in touch with them now. And in fact, they chose, when they'd completed their transition, they chose to call themselves Debbie as their new name.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, I don't know whether it was a compliment to me or not, but I mean, I felt that it was something that, you know, was a wonderful kind of token.
Yes.
We'd gone a little bit of this journey together, and I understood what she'd gone through in going as far as she had at the time. She was wonderful. She read everything I wrote. She put me straight where I'd got it wrong. She talked about a lot of very personal things, which a lot of people in that position do suffer from, you know, the ostracising, the prejudice, the bad treatment that people get, the abuse, the isolation. I mean, some of it is awful. So that's why I say, to go through that and continue through that, anybody doing that has immense bravery, I think. So the book, I've often, when I'm asked what it's about, I say it's as much about the story of somebody going through that process as about bravery, not being a coward, but facing life as it is. Not a single moment of bravery, which, you know, people can pull themselves out and do it. It's that ongoing being brave every day and facing life every day in the face of opposition.
Brilliant. Amazing. Let's go back a bit. Tell me about your experience of the arts at school and generally as a child.
Well, I had parents who always encouraged me to read, and my father particularly. And my father encouraged me with everything, with writing, reading and painting. So he was the most wonderful role model in that sense. Always interested in everything, always happy, always had a story to tell himself. So a lovely man. Both my parents encouraged me, took me to the library every week. I read all the way through all the shelves in the library until we ran out of our little library stock. But it made me really love reading. And so when I went on to secondary school, I was incredibly happy, lucky to have an English teacher who was also quite inspiring in the way they taught. And really encouraged me with a love of literature, really got me interested in it. And I think that's the key, really, isn't it? That, you know, to actually learn how to understand something and really engage in it when you're young.
Yes.
And it just sets you up for life. So I suppose I've been funneled into it by already loving reading, but I started to understand literature, you know, even Shakespeare and that sort of thing, which, you know, for teenagers is quite difficult.
Yeah.
But I loved it, and it encouraged me to go on to university. Pretty much the same with art as well, actually. I had encouragement with painting, art and painting as well, through my father and through a teacher at school. So that's where I went.
Brilliant. That was a good experience for you. Where did life take you after university?
Well, completely away from it, actually. I came out of university in the 80s and there was a real dearth of employment at the time. We were having one of our employment crises. So I actually did an extra year in university to do a postgraduate teaching qualification, which has stood me in good stead, later on in life. Not teaching in schools, I don't teach in schools, but I do teach adult education. I teach writing, I teach painting. But what I ended up doing was actually going into the civil service because they offered jobs at the time. I had to come back from London where I had been at university and been living because literally I ran out of money and I had no job. So I went back to live at home, which was a bit of a come down. And found my job in the civil service. It's just a pure clerical position. But the civil service run management schemes and they look at graduate entry schemes as well. And I was lucky to have a manager in the unemployment benefit office where I was working who pushed me into the graduate entry scheme because she knew I had a degree. And I got into it and I got funneled from it into the Inland Revenue. But the last place on earth you would want to end up. I have to give the civil service its due. Its training is immaculate. It's really good. And the people, I mean, the whole thing about any job and anything you do, it's all about the people, isn't it? So the people make it. I effectively went through a management programme, which put me through almost like another degree, but in law, accountancy, bookkeeping, all that sort of thing. I dealt with a lot of very high level accounts, public accounts. It was quite stimulating. Not really what I wanted to do, but it was very intellectually stimulating. And I came out of it really only when I had my children and realised that this was my escape route. I didn't really want to stay in it, and I moved on to other things. And the other things I moved on to were, ironically, again, nothing to do with writing or literature, art. Because I set up a children's nursery because I realised when I was trying to find a way to go back to work, there were no nurseries around. There was just no way of providing for your children.
Yeah.
I was lucky my mother and my father had my older daughter for a couple of days a week while I went back to work part-time. Mm. But, increasingly that becomes more difficult as they get older. I thought, the answer is to do something about it.
Amazing.
And the Inland Revenue, of course, had enabled me to understand how businesses work and how accounts work and everything you do with a business. So I set up a nursery and it gradually grew from a little preschool in the local Scout Hall to a three-site kind of monstrosity with about 160 children on the books going through. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I loved it because it was incredible working with children, seeing them come in, tiny, but grow and they soak information and knowledge up like sponges. And so it was another very interesting period of my life.
Moving to Oxfordshire helped you to reshape your life and your writing started taking you in new directions. Tell me more about that time.
The move to Oxfordshire was that my older daughter had come to Oxford University and she was intent on getting me and my younger daughter to move to Oxfordshire because by then the father died and we were kind of a little bit in limbo because it was quite difficult picking up the threads of your life after such a major catastrophe really in it. Mm. And there wasn't a lot keeping me. I was thinking about moving on from the nursery anyway because the government cuts and so on were making it increasingly more and more difficult to keep things running. And I said, okay, we'll come to Oxfordshire for one day, look around some properties. If we find anywhere we want to move to, we'll do it. If we don't, then that's it. And we did. We found some. We thought at the time we wanted to move to. We didn't end up going there. There were one or two issues, but it kind of made the shift happen.
Yeah.
And I thought, actually, now is the time to just start doing something I love doing because I've spent an awful lot of my life doing things I've had to do to keep my family going. Especially after my husband had died, of course, and I had to support my family on my own and bring my daughters up on my own. And I thought, now's the time to do it and actually really make the most of something I feel I've got something to put into because I felt like I'd lived quite a lot of life by then as well.
Yeah.
And you put a lot of yourself and what you've experienced and what you know what other people experienced, how you understand it, into what you write, I think. And writing helps you understand it more as well, because you have to explore what it might be like for somebody experiencing this or having to decide whether they're going to do that or make a choice.
Yeah.
And I felt, you know, when you got to that tipping point where you've had a lot of experience, maybe a lot of drama, sadness, tragedy, difficulties, choices to make, it does make you start to be able to put yourself into somebody else's shoes more easily than you could have done if life has just flowed on really easily and you've never been faced with any difficult decisions. So I always think, in a way, even though there have been times when life has not been good, it's given me something. It's there's been a bonus to it that you have to try and see and use for yourself and for other people in the future. I kind of like to try and think I'm doing that a little bit through writing.
Yeah. What do you like to write about?
People, really. I write thrillers and I write psychological thrillers, but I also write what they call literary fiction, which is just a story of somebody dealing with a situation. But the similarity between them all, the central thing between them all, is just people. You know, what do people do? How do people cope with things? How do people choose to do things? What happens when they choose to do them and what their reactions are? And it's very much about what's going on inside us and how we manage to cope with it, rise above it, you know, make difficult choices, get past difficult places, situations in our lives. And I think it's what they say with young adult fiction. You know, we have a lot of fantasy young adult fiction, but within it, they're real life situations. So all we've done is round it all up, you know, package it all up as a fantasy so it's more readable. But it's actually letting a young person, a teenager, start to understand how you cope with some of these difficult situations in your life and how you make choices and how you're the same as everyone else making these same difficult choices and coping with them. I do it by putting them into thrillers, in mysteries, into things where people are trying to work something out. You know, and I do like that bit, like, you know, you have to try and work out what's going on. Yeah, because that's just like teasing your brain a bit. Yeah. So I like that anyway. That's the aim.
Yeah.
Because we're like really examine what's going on inside us and how we deal with things.
Wow. You encourage other people to write their life stories. Why do you think that's important?
Writing is very much a way of also looking at yourself and understanding yourself, and also understanding why other people behave as they do. So it can be a very cathartic experience to actually write about something you've experienced and start to understand it through that. I've noticed that especially with people who come on any of the courses and workshops and retreats I've done on writing life stories, autobiographies or biographies, because they've suddenly had aha moments, like, you know, well, I never really realised that was why they maybe did that, or why that happened to me, or why I felt like that. I mean, there also can be very difficult moments because they do suddenly bring things up right up in front of you, and you know, and you've got to deal with it. And there can be traumatic times that people have to deal with. I've had in the past, I've had two or three people have said, I didn't realise that, you know, for instance, perhaps I was being abused then.
Right.
So you have to be prepared for that. Luckily, I mean, I was trained in how to deal with people who suddenly realised that they'd been abused or said that they'd been abused, because I'd had to deal with that with children. I dealt with social service and all kinds of things. For me, it wasn't something that worried me about dealing with. But I mean, anybody who is actually helping somebody or encouraging somebody to write a life story should be aware that that is a possibility. But it's also a social history, isn't it? We lose so much of our life histories and our parents' life histories, our other relations' life histories, our grandparents' life histories. My grandfather lived through two world wars. He was a dispatch rider in the Second World War. I've got an amazing photograph of him on his bike, actually, his motorbike, out in France. And yet I don't know hardly any of the things that happened to him, because it wasn't passed on. Mm. We stopped being
verbal storytellers, as we used to, and those stories all used to get passed down. We used to carry them on. We've stopped doing that. So all those stories which really bring history and life and how history has shaped life and our culture and the way we go about things now, they're all being lost. I mean, even many of my mother's stories, I don't know a lot of those. I mean, I incorporated one of them into one of my books. It's a story about the Rag and Bone Man. It kind of rang a bell with me, and I put the story, or put a little snippet of it, into the Patchwork Van. That would otherwise be lost if my mother hadn't passed it on to me. Those little things which were real then and can bring those times in our lives, in our past history, alive to people who weren't alive then. But having said that, a lot of people say, I want to write a book, or I want to write a story, or I want to write a life story, and they don't know how to. Mm. You know, they have no idea how to start. They have no idea how to write it, how to deal with it, because you can get very bogged down in the middle of it all. And they need somebody to help them. So I am now doing that with particular people. You know, people come to me and we write a book together. You know, I help them write their book. It's their book. I have nothing to do with it when it's finished, but I've helped them along the way, and they've made use of the fact that I know how to write. I know how to write a book, and I know how to pull all those facts together and turn them into a story. And then they could take it away, and it's theirs, and it's there for them, their family, their friends, whatever they want to do with it. It's a wonderful experience for me as well, actually, because I see them, you know, a lady I'm just working with at the moment has just finished her last chapter. Literally last week finished her last chapter, and she said to me, I would never have believed I could have done this. And it's lovely. It's a really lovely thing to help somebody achieve something that they wanted to do but wouldn't have known how to on their own. So that I get something from it too.
Brilliant. Good. So you've spoken about helping others. I'm just wondering whether your success and your helping of others has taken away any of the release you originally found when you started writing. Do you still have that balance for yourself and for others?
Creativityfound.co.uk is the place to go to find workshops, courses, supplies, kits, and books to help you get creative. So if you're looking for your own Creativity Found experience, go have a browse to see what's on offer. And if you can help adults to find their new creative passion with your classes, online offerings or kits, visit creativityfound.co.uk/join us to become a member of our brilliant promotional and networking collective. There's a handy link in the show notes.
Yes, I do, because I mean, I'm in the process of writing a 4-book series at the moment, which has been hanging around for about 4 to 5 years. I've written bits of it and then, oh, I don't know, that's not quite right, and then gone away and then reshaped it and gone backwards and forwards, and I'm back to doing it, and it's suddenly starting to fall into place for me now. So this afternoon, my treat for myself will be the whole afternoon of writing another chapter in it, and I get to that the stage where if I haven't been writing, right, I suddenly feel like I feel like I've got to write. And when I'm writing, it just takes me into another world. So no, I've never lost it.
Good.
And I don't lose it actually when I'm writing with somebody or I'm helping somebody to write their story, because every story is fascinating and their stories are fascinating. And you know, and as long as you allow yourself to go with it, you can become immersed in that story too, you know, and having the ideas that prompt it to turn into a, you know, something more, or take another direction, add more to it, they're all as exciting for somebody else when you're working with somebody else as they are when you're working for yourself.
So I
don't think I will ever lose that, actually.
You've had your work published traditionally, but you prefer to self-publish. Why is that, and how do you find the process of self-publishing?
Well, the first book I had that was published was a massive learning curve, because I found that it was amazingly excited to have it accepted, and then to suddenly find it, you know, a little physical copy of it in my hands. Such a massive achievement. But after the excitement wore off, I started to realise that I had no control over it at all once that had happened. So I had no control over the cover design. I had no control over the cover blurb. Mm. I had no control over how it was marketed, how much it was marketed for, where it is marketed. You put all that time and energy and creativity into writing something, and then when a publisher takes it off of you, they literally do take it away from you, and that's it.
Yeah.
And all you get is like a small portion of royalties back. Mm. And it feels like it's a very personal thing, writing a book. I mean, because it is so much of you that's going into it, your perspectives, your understanding, your beliefs, the work you've put into researching things, and your creativity as well.
Mm.
So to just hand that all over to somebody and say, well, there you go, do what you want with it now, just give me a few pennies from time to time.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel right. And my first experience of self-publishing was kind of forced on me, funnily enough, with Chained Melodies, which, because it wasn't my first book to be published, and I only self-published it because at the time I'd finished it, the people I'd sort of going to for research and discussion and for them to make sure that it was right, so checking its consistency and its credibility, they said, did you know that there is a nationally touring exhibition of transgender portraits being arranged by Sheffield Primary Care Trust? And it was to try and raise awareness of the issues that, and also to like normalise the fact that, you know, these people weren't odd, they were just people. And it was coming to Bournemouth. The exhibition was going to be straight across Bournemouth Library and into a big cafe bar, which was based underneath the library, which is very popular with everybody, from mums with toddlers up to grandparents with toddlers that they were looking after.
Yeah.
And but especially the transgender and the LGBT community, because the two men who ran it were gay, and they were very, very understanding of everybody and everything, and it was a lovely atmosphere, the most accepting, comfortable, friendly atmosphere I've ever come across. And the exhibition, obviously because of their links, was going to be partly on their walls too, and there was a big party planned and a big launch, and they said to me, can you please not get your book published at the same time? I said, it doesn't work like that. Yeah. You know, you can't just say, oh, I'll get it published next week then. And they said, but is there no way you can do it? So in the end, I said, well, I suppose it could be self-published, because that you do have control over the timing, because normally with traditional publishing, it could take ages and ages to get a book out. And I said, well, okay, we'll try it. So that was my first foray into it. And it was kind of quite a, you know, again, another steep learning curve, learning how to do it. It came out at the time. It was part of the launch of the whole exhibition. It was really quite an amazing experience. I met so many people, had so many very unusual conversations during the course of it. But it made me realise also that all of a sudden you actually did have control over everything. You know, you had complete autonomy. You chose your cover design. You chose what you wrote about it. You chose how you marketed it. You chose what price it was available for. You chose who you put it to for reviewers. You chose everything. And it felt right. This was your book. You should be doing all of that.
Yeah.
Of course, it raises all those other problems, like, you know, you're a writer, not a promoter or a marketer or a cover designer or any of that. So you have to sort of like pull in resources from all kinds of places, and gradually you start to understand where you can get those resources and that help from. So it is a very steep learning curve. But increasingly, I also become aware, the more I've been involved in the whole publishing, writing industry, and teaching, I suppose, as well, teaching it, that there are so many good books out there and good writers out there who never get past what they call the gatekeepers. So literary agents who your book has to go to be accepted, and then the agent represents you to a publisher. They call themselves the gatekeepers. And I've talked to many literary agents who refer to themselves as the gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. We make sure you get the quality books. Actually, no, you don't, because some of those books out there are terrible. Yeah. And we could all name some,
definitely,
which we won't name. But some of them are terrible. It's just somebody's found an angle to make them commercially viable. So they get thrust in everybody's face. Whereas there are some extremely good books out there
self-published, independently published, that art would never stand a chance. Mainly, a lot of the time, is because agents and publishers have already maybe got a book underway in the publishing process that is not dissimilar to the one that's being presented to them. And they say, well, we're not going to have two of the same kind of thing going out at the same time. So sorry, yours will fall by the wayside. But that doesn't mean to say that book that would fall by the wayside isn't just as valuable and just as good and wouldn't be just as enjoyed by the reading public.
Yeah.
With Rosie, the Golden Retriever, tap dancing in the background, Deborah told me more about how she can help others on their self-publishing journey.
I also offer a self-publishing package for anybody who wants to come to me, because there is a lot involved in it, obviously, and a lot of technicalities involved in it. So, but you know, once you've got somebody who can just say, I know what to do, I can do this, and I will do it at the most economical way I can for you. So at the end of the day, you've got the book out there and you do what you want with it after that. Now, you know, having experienced COVID, I've taken a lot of the things I was teaching and put them into three online courses.
Okay.
So one on life writing, one on novel writing, and one on self-publishing.
Brilliant. I know that you don't measure your success by your sales figures. How do you encourage others to value their writing?
Well, that's something I've always said right from the outset in every workshop, class, or anything I've ever done teaching or mentoring anybody, is never think I'm going to go and write a bestseller and I want to make a lot of money out of it. You know, never think that's the reason for doing it. Do it because you are going to get something out of it personally. You're going to get satisfaction, you've done it. You're going to get a sense of achievement, you've done it. You're going to learn an awful lot by doing it, because you know, you're going to learn about yourself and other people, and also learn the technique of writing, and ultimately maybe self-publishing, and it's going to help you grow. And all of those things together, they're the things that are really valuable alongside, yes, lovely if you get paid for it, lovely if you sell some, but you know, the thing to do is never to just value yourself by how much you're paid. Mm-hmm. It's by how much you can do and how much value it creates and gives to you as a person.
Yeah.
And then you, of course, can give to other people as a person, because, you know, whatever you gain for yourself, you should be able to give back to other people in some way, even if it's just by being able to, you know, talk to them about something or just provide a book that they'd like to read.
Yeah.
There are many, many podcasts out there. It's difficult to know where to start. So I like to ask my guests for their recommendations. You're welcome.
Joanna Penn is a self-publishing star. I mean, she's been around for a little while. She writes mystery thrillers, but she is also amazingly generous with all the information she gives out to people and provides in all kinds of ways. And she has a podcast called the Creative Pen Podcast, and that's PENN. That's excellent, and covers all kinds of things. There's a gentleman called Mark Dawson who got himself on the Forbes list for having done so well with self-publishing, but he has a podcast called The Self-Publishing Formula. So that's very good. And the other one, I think, is the Alliance of Independent Authors, ALI, which I would recommend people have a look at. Anybody who's writing, starting to write, hoping to write properly and get books out there, have a look at ALI. They're very helpful. They cover all kinds of things. They have a regular podcast, regular webinars, information as well on their website. So
brilliant.
They're very helpful too.
Yeah. How can people connect with you, contact you, maybe take part in your courses?
My website, if you want to look at my books and everything to do with my books and my paintings, because I have got my gallery of paintings on there.
Oh, we'll have to come back for that one.
But that you can find as www.debrahmartin.co.uk. But that will shortly be redirecting you to another website, which is all to do with teaching and how I can help you. Ghostwriting, mentoring, teaching, and self-publishing. And that's www.book-works.co.uk. Anybody would be very welcome to just email me at info@debrahmartin.co.uk.
And it's lovely hearing from people, and I love hearing people's stories as well, so and seeing what I can do to help them.
Fabulous. That's been really lovely to hear everything, to hear your story. And I'll see you soon. Thank you very much, Deborah.
Creativity Found is an Open Stage Arts production. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please subscribe, rate and review. If you would like to contribute to future episodes, visit ko-fi.com/creativityfoundpodcast. If you contact any of the artists featured, sign up to their workshops or buy their products, don't forget to mention Creativity Found Podcast. On Instagram or Facebook, follow at Creativity Found Podcast, where you'll find photos of our contributors' artwork and be kept abreast of everything we're up to.